AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. Let me check this again. Oh my gosh. Look at that. The grain markets are absolutely off and running again this morning with the soy complex leading the way. And if it isn't already, the Fisher-Grassley Cattle Marketing and Transparency Bill is going to be big news this week. And, hey, let's talk supply chain with Winfield United.
Live from the glorious return of February via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we begin with a conversation with Brett Brueggemann, the president of Winfield United and executive vice president of Land O'Lakes, Inc. Then it's on to U.S. Senator Deb Fischer of Nebraska and USCA director Lee Reichmuth. Right after the news, Karen Bonert from Farm Journal's Milk. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
Holy smokes, we got a lot. Really? We've got Brueggemann on the show this morning. Wow.
Yep.
President of Winfield United. That is going to be an interesting conversation. We've got to start off the conversation with Brett with a little bit about what's going on with the supply chain, right? And how the retail locations that are serviced by Winfield United are holding up. How are they doing with the struggle? Mm-hmm. Because it's still a struggle, Davis. There's no question about it. So we'll get Mr. Brueggemann's take on that. And then can we talk about the cattle market transparency act bill again? It's the Grassley-Fisher bill. There are others who have put their name on it, but it is well known as the Grassley-Fisher bill. It's going to be big news. There's no question in my mind that it's going to be a topic of discussion everywhere this week, and it's because of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association meeting that's going on down in Texas. At the receptions last night, it was talked about. At the state meetings this morning, it's been a major, the number one topic of discussion, and whether or not the states are going to support the bill or not support the bill. And at the heart of it all is the mandatory cash trade, cash trade. And at what level should it be set? Lots of questions. So we're going to talk with Senator Fischer about the bill. We've got some questions from Texas that I've got for Senator Fischer. And then Lee Reichmuth from the U.S. Cattlemen's Association, because NCBA is going to be out with their partial support for the Fisher-Grassley bill. And the thing that they can't support because of their bylaws is the mandatory cash trade component of it. U.S. Cattlemen's Association is in favor of it, and we'll get Lee's take on that coming up here in a little bit. Okay.
Well, very good.
A lot to get to. Let's get to the news.
Yes. Well, first of all, a major winter storm is expected to impact much of the central U.S. beginning Tuesday night and continuing through Thursday morning. Frigid Arctic air is forecast to sweep across the Great Plains beginning Wednesday, according to the National Weather Service. Michael Clark mentioned this yesterday, and it took us both by surprise, so I bring it up so it doesn't take anybody by surprise.
Yeah. If you're in the target area where there's going to be a foot of snow, I'm sure that it has been all over the local news. But this is it's a big storm. No doubt about it. Yeah, and South Bend, the headquarters of the Farm Journal broadcast, is going to get hammered by it.
Mm-hmm. Well, U.S. and Canadian rules that went into effect requiring foreign nationals entering the countries to be vaccinated for COVID-19 are already causing impacts, even as the U.S. requirements went into effect on January 22nd. Canadian requirements took hold January 15. Bob Costello, chief economist with the American Trucking Association, said the situation has the, quote, potential to cause significant disruptions across the supply chain. And speaking of that supply chain, the White House is working to accelerate ag exports through U.S. ports. The government says it will pay part of the cost for a 25-acre pop-up site near the Oakland, California port, which will be dedicated to loading farm exports into scarce containers. The site could go into operation as soon as early March, Chip.
Wow, that's good news. That's great news.
That is
a solution. That that will help free things up, I think, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, mounting conflict in the breadbasket of Europe is driving volatility in wheat markets. Russia and Ukraine account for 29% of global wheat exports, and wheat futures are rising on the threat of war and the potential for Western sanctions on Russian exports, this according to the Wall Street Journal. The ports in both nations are key gateways for grain exports to buyers in North Africa and the Middle East, and damage to port infrastructure or disruption to shipments could snarl supplies for countries that depend on imports to keep their populations fed.
Yeah.
Meanwhile,
go ahead. No, you go.
Well, U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken will speak by phone with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov following U.S. proposals on de-escalating the situation. Russia still denies it plans an invasion. Western allies finalizing a package of sanctions. I still don't know what to make of this.
Well, the wheat market was sharply lower yesterday. It's got back about half of those losses today. But I'm not sure if it's because of the efforts by Secretary of State Blinken or not. I don't think so when we've got bean futures 35 to 40 cents higher right now. It looks more like spillover support.
Well, talks with China on meeting the terms of the Phase 1 agreement signed between the U.S. and China under the Trump administration have not yet yielded any results, according to U.S. Trade Rep Catherine Tai. The talks apparently will take longer than many have expected. Tai's comments focused on the purchase commitments, but U.S. ag interests are even more focused on getting China to fulfill their commitments on areas like biotechnology approvals and other trade matters that have tempered trade with China, and this pushes further back any possibility of a Phase 2 set of negotiations. Chip.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, we've got this bean market, Davis, I'm telling you, 15.25 to 30 in the old crop contracts this morning.
Oof.
It's absolutely crazy. Let's bring in Karen Boner. She is the editor of Farm Journal's Milk. Good morning, Karen.
Hey, Chip. Good morning.
All right. So labor issues, constant challenge for dairies. Tell us what's happening in New York with the overtime laws.
Sure. Well, it's obviously in the news once again. The debate is to lower New York's agriculture overtime limit to 40 hours. It now is in the hands of the state labor commissioner. After a panel voted 2-1 late last week that would reduce the overtime to a 40-hour work week by 2032. And so the threshold would drop 4 hours per week every 2 years beginning in 2024. As you might know, New York has nearly 4,000 dairy farms that produce more than 15 billion pounds of milk annually. That ranks them number 4 in the nation for milk production. Obviously, they depend on labor to get that way. I did speak to one New York dairy farmer, Chip, in Buffalo, who has 15 employees. And like most farmers, they're very disheartened by this news. The Reynolds family said, when people who have never milked a cow or picked an apple or hired a farm employee are deciding the future of agriculture in our state, it's a scary thing.
Yeah.
So obviously this is a kick in the teeth for them. Minimum wage just increased in New York on January 1st from $12.50 to $13.20. As you know, labor is the second cost to dairy farms on a dairy farm right behind that rising feed bill. Just 2 years ago, New York passed a law for ag employers to pay overtime after 60-hour work weeks. So obviously a lot of change in a short amount of time. There were hundreds of testimonies given before that vote, despite 70% of the testimonies made by farmers and farm workers who asked for overtime to stay at 60 hours, the vote was not in the favor of farmers. So this is very worrisome, not only in New York, but, you know, other states worry, is it only a matter of time before it comes to our neck of the woods?
Well, yeah, and it's how quickly the vote was taken and how much consideration was given to those comments from the farm community, the ag community. That was a little disheartening because it didn't look like they were given much attention at all. Karen, thank you so much for the update. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you.
You bet. Brett Brueggemann from Winfield United up next.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
If the world is your oyster, we've got pearls of wisdom on AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Glad that you're with us this morning. Davis Michelson is with us. And
yes, sir.
Davis, what Karen just said about from that New York dairy producer about, you know, people that have never milked a cow, never picked an apple, setting how they're going to conduct their business on their farms.
Yes.
And then we've got people out in California telling us how we're going to raise hogs in Iowa. Sometimes I got to believe that this has gotten upside down in many ways.
It does. And it's not only production practices that certain folks don't understand. It's also the market impacts, which goes straight.
The consequences.
Straight down to the back pocket of good folks like you and me.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. The consequences associated with some of these decisions out there. All right. Yep. Let's get into this conversation right now with Brett Brueggemann. He is the president of Winfield United and executive VP of Lando Lakes. Brett, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you?
Good, Chip. Davis, thanks for having us on.
Yeah, glad that you are here. How long has it been since Winfield and United joined forces?
2016. So quite a while, but about five, almost six seasons now.
And just give us a quick update on how it's working out. Are you finding the efficiencies that you were looking for?
We really are, Chip. And it's a little bit back to your point about what you were just talking about upside down is, you know, when you talk about having a national voice for national issues, it was really about how do we get together and make sure that we represent our local owner, our retailer, and the grower and their grower. And yeah, we're definitely getting some synergies on what I would say our go-to-market strategy, but also around technology and also around a voice. With only 2% of the population being in ag, as you know, at Land O'Lakes, we spend a lot of time in Washington, D.C. to try to have what I would say an objective opinion in that area. So a lot of good things happening. We don't have all the answers, though, Chip. We're still working every day and a lot of work to do yet.
Yeah, very good. Very good. You know, one of the things that impressed me, it was at least a year ago, how you were putting such a focus on gaining efficiency from every step in that supply chain. And here we are. We've got some real struggles. How is Winfield United dealing with the issues in the supply chain right now?
You know, we've been fortunate and I'm so proud of the team and so proud of our retail owner base because a lot of it, Chip, is we got ahead of it from a planning perspective.
Yeah.
And we really looked at, you know, where can we take steps out and maybe change behaviors, whether it's forecasting or getting digitally connected with some software called Evolve. We have about 90% of our business now that we're tracking that way. And we've done really well. Our deliveries are down 38% year over year. And we sold a heck of a lot more this year versus last year. And we took 1 million miles out of our supply chain network. So from a carbon standpoint, it's huge. It's huge.
Yeah. Yeah. That's impressive. The retail locations that you service, how confident are we that they're going to have what producers need in the spring of 2022 to get the job done?
You know, I think for the most part, because of the planning and things that they've done, we're really in a good shape as far as getting the crop inputs. Now, what I would say, Chip, is two things. Number one is it's going to, you know, you may not have exactly the brand you want or the SKU that you want, but there's going to be enough weed killer, enough fertilizer. It's just going to take some planning and some efficiency. The second thing I would say, which is probably the most important, is making sure we get it done right the first time. Yeah. You know, resprays and those things, getting a pre-down and the fungicide, it's just so important we get it done right to begin with. So, but we feel confident. We feel really confident.
Okay, good, 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 good. Okay, tell us about Advanced Acre. What is it?
Yeah, our Advanced Acre, the what in it, and as you know, Winfield United and really our retail owners and their 4,000 retail sellers have always taken an agronomic leadership position, right? We've always been about placement with the answer plots and all those pieces. And really what we've done is we've expanded our strategy to add not only to agronomic leadership, but an economic part of it. And it's really the expansion of what we call building digital solutions on products, services, and connections. So you're saying, well, what is services and connections? Really in two areas, Chip, that we're building new markets. One is around new markets, particularly around outcome-based crop level values. For example, you know, carbon levels in grains, starch levels in grain, protein levels in grains, new markets that help the grower take advantage of what's happening downstream with some of the food companies to pay for these premiums. The second part of it is around risk management. And we redesigned our answer plots really to turn those answer plots into actuary tables. And it's all about, as you know, to increase predictability and try to take as much risk out of farming as you can. Yeah. And that's what we've done. So it's really those two areas that we're trying to fill pain points for the grower of tomorrow. And our retail owner really pushed us in this area to say, let's move to a new scalable asset that's differential in the marketplace.
Okay. This sounds to me like it's going to take a new level of communication and cooperation and willingness to share information from the farmer level. What have you had an opportunity to get much of a reaction from farmers at this point to this?
You know, we have, and you're right. There's so much noise in the marketplace. I would tell you, we had almost 200,000 acres, you know, with our carbon transaction with Microsoft. So we got a lot of great learnings in that particular piece. You know, particularly around it starts with soil and particularly around how important it is to have the retailer help them with the administration piece. So we have experience there, but then we also had about 200,000 acres, Chip, of what we call our RX program, our warranty programs on inputs that are based off our actuary tables with our answer plots. And we've had that those answer plots for about two decades. We started shifting about a year ago. And what we're measuring is off the APH of that farmer's field. So again, we're dialing that in. We're co-authoring. What's great about our model is we're owned by retail and the grower. And so we're wanting to bring them in and help us, you know, solve for these pain points and build this together.
Okay. What does this network look like in the future? Between your customers, the farmers, and the retail locations, and all the way back up to Land O'Lakes, what does that network look like?
Yeah, it's a great question, and the crystal ball, you know, could go a thousand different ways. But I think where we're at is we're focused on how do we make it feel and look like a one step that has the efficiencies, but also takes the opportunity to use that retail seller, right? That fourth, you need market access. You need people that are going to sit down and consult and be that trusted advisor with the grower. Right. But then you need to repurpose and probably repurpose the cost to serve from some things maybe that we're duplicating now, like the supply chain, and move that investment into IT. We've invested a ton into the insights engine with Truterra and Evolve and some of the pieces that I have. And then I think the third thing is you're going to see us as a retail network utilize some of the grain infrastructure that these retailers have invested millions in, Chip. And people are willing to pay a premium for food, right? We're seeing it right now. I have four kids, and I'll tell you, they pay more for food than what Kelly and I did when we first got married, sure. And they want to know where it came from. So I think it's going to be much more streamlined. I think it's going to be much more digitally, digital is going to be utilized. Yeah. And I think we're truly going to use the power of our cooperative system, maybe like we haven't used before, Chip.
Okay. Where do you, I've only got about a minute left here, Brett, but tell me about your carbon market plans.
Yeah, the carbon market plans, like I said, we learned a ton last year. And I would just tell you this, the power of having a conversation with a grower around topsoil is it's just another level of discussion, right? Because it's the number one asset. It's so purposeful. And I think what we're finding is our retail owners are saying that's a level of conversation I want to have because it leads to a lot of other different pieces. The second thing we would say is there are a whole lot more growers interested in soil health and carbon than what maybe the market is saying. Now, they may just want to have an assessment. And that's the thing you're going to see with us this year. We have three offers. One offer is this, the TruTerra 2.0, the second tranche from Microsoft. Okay. The second one is around what we call a complete acre that actually utilizes an RX nitrogen. And then the third one is this soil assessment on what their farm potential is.
Okay.
So we're excited.
Good.
We're targeting a lot of acres.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Brett, we are out of time. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Chip.
Absolutely. Brett Brueggemann from Winfield United.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beach, give me a fundamental reason for this, for what's happening in the soy complex.
Well, I guess you could pin it on continued declines in the Brazilian and Argentine crop estimates, but really this is a lot of money flow coming into the long side of the market. We blew through $15 in the old crop contract, the March contract in particular, and just caught buy stops above that. And the other thing is it's broad-based. The meal market, it's trading more than $13 higher in the front end this morning, and soy oil's up over 100 points, and so just a really explosive move across the soy complex.
Yeah, should make sure that everybody understands. We've got 35-cent gains going in the soybean market. Soybean meal is, call it, $10 to $13 higher, and soybean oil is 100 to 130 points higher. So big moves in the soy complex, providing some support for corn and wheat.
Yeah, now wheat yesterday had bearish reversals, so this is a bounce back for them, and they're recouping some of what they lost yesterday, but wheat showed strength overnight and really was the upside price leader there. But this is corrective action and being largely driven by the fact that yesterday's losses were probably overdone in the huge strength of the soy complex. Corn is also following to the upside.
Gotcha. Take us over to livestock. Big move in lean hogs.
So the lean hog market, explosive gains there in the back end in particular. The front end of the market, so with February, it's limited in its strength, but big moves otherwise. Cattle market, to be honest with you, I'm a little bit surprised we aren't seeing more strength than we are in live cattle after yesterday's cattle inventory report.
Gotcha. All right. Thank you, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. We don't make the news, we render it. AgriTalk.
There's a lot being rendered down in Houston at the National Cattlemen's Beef Association meeting this week. It's the annual beef meet down there and in Texas for the NCBA. But it's going to be making, there's going to be news coming out of Texas this week, and it's going to be in relation to what is commonly referred to as the Fisher-Grassley bill, and it's going to be a major point of discussion. In fact, it is a major point of discussion at last night's receptions, at this morning's state meetings. There are components of the Cattle Price Discovery and Transparency Act that NCBA does support. But what the group says it cannot support because of bylaws is the mandating of cash trade, which is a major component of Senator Fisher's bill. She joins us right now, Senator Deb Fisher from Nebraska. Thank you for making time for AgriTalk.
Oh, it's great to be here with you today. Thank you.
Glad that you are here. And we've also got Lee Richmuth. He is a director for the U.S. Cattlemen's Association out of Nebraska. Lee, welcome to AgriTalk.
Thank you, Chip.
Glad that you guys are here. Okay, Senator Fisher, this has been discussed and it's been well documented, but let's make sure that we all understand this. Why do you think that a certain level, the reason that I say certain level is because it will vary by region, that a certain level of cash trade should be negotiated and mandated by on a regional basis?
Well, a couple of things here. You know, first of all, the name of the bill is the Cattle Price Discovery and Transparency Act. And that really says it all. If we're going to have a strong market, if we're going to have a strong economic segment in the cattle industry, from cow-calf producers to large and small feedlots to our packers, and help the consumers get a good steak, we want to make sure that every segment of the industry is going to be successful. And in order for that to happen, I believe that there has to be transparency. There has to be information available. And in order to do that, you have to really know what the negotiated price is. You have to have an understanding of what the market is. And if we can be able to have that available on a regional basis, because every region's different. You know, Lee knows in Nebraska, we want to know what the market is in Nebraska. In Texas, that's an entirely different market. They handle their cattle differently. So their market's going to be different. But we need to know regionally what that market is so that we have that information available and family farmers and ranchers can make better decisions.
Okay. All right. Lee, is mandating cash trade at a certain level, does that get the results that the U.S. Cattlemen Association is looking for?
It is. And I think you need to kind of take a look at this industry from a airplane point of view. What you have is you have a in the north where a large percent of the cash trade is negotiated. The cattle are higher quality. And in the south, you have a lot smaller percent, particularly Texas is even less than 10% negotiated cash trade. But all of this stuff is based off of the cash market. Now, if you look at what the prices are you're receiving up in the north, this research shows that cash traders are getting anywhere from $20 to $40 less than formula cattle. And so your negotiated cash traders in the north are receiving a subpar price for negotiating the cash trade for a higher quality product than those in the south. At the end of the day, the formulas, AMA agreements, somewhat cause a captive supply issue. And with this captive supply, you get, you know, four packers. We have four packers that control 85% of the market, which, you know, some would beg that would be considered a monopoly. And so you have to have rules in place and can make sure that the cash trade doesn't go any lower than a certain threshold, because we need to have true price discoveries. We don't need to have the games being played that can be played. So that's, yes, from our standpoint, U.S. Cattlemen Association believes that we need to have a minimum. And bear in mind, this is a minimum. This isn't saying that you can't have higher cash integration. In fact, we support that, but we need to have price discoveries in a strong cash market particularly the smaller producers to stay in business.
Okay. And really what it comes down to, Lee, I'm going to direct this one to you, is it's farmer feeders versus commercial feedlots, right?
Not necessarily, because some farmer feeders do formula and some larger corporate yards do sell some cash. So I wouldn't say that to be true. There's probably a larger percent of corporate feeders that do formula. And there's also, you know, the smaller feeders tend to do more of the cash trade in the north, because that's where a lot of smaller feeders are, is in the north.
The way it looks to me is NCBA is going to come out with partial support of the Cattle Price Discovery and Transparency Act, and some states are going to say, listen, we need that the cash mandated trade. That's going to be your state, Lee. I think Nebraska is going to be in there. Iowa's going to be in there. South Dakota's going to be in there. And then you get further south, and Senator Fisher, from the south, the mandated negotiated cash trade, it seems like it's a non-starter. Is there any room for negotiation on the mandated cash trade in the bill?
You know, we've been working on this bill for a few years now. We've got support here in the Senate from 8 Republicans and 9 Democrats. And it's from senators from Mississippi to Wyoming to New Mexico, mm-hmm. Nebraska and Iowa, Oregon. So there's a wide acceptance of what we're looking at. You know, if a voluntary approach would have worked, I think that we'd have that, but it hasn't worked. And so that's why we're in the spot that we're in right now. We've seen an increase in negotiated sales in Texas over the past 18 months. And there hasn't been any kind of widespread economic consequence to those sales. It has worked. I like to think maybe our bill being out there has encouraged those sales in Texas.
Well, I don't think there's any question about that, Senator. I think it very much has done that.
And I think that's important to see, but it shows that the realization that those sales really haven't caused any big disaster to happen with the economy there. That price discovery is an important part of being able to market cattle, to being able to have family farmers, family ranchers succeed. And in order to do it, I think it has to be mandated. I don't support the national mandated system. Senator Grassley and I worked that out to be able to have a regional one, which I think addresses some of the concerns that people had about a mandate. By making it a regional one, I think that takes away some of those concerns.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you, Senator, because if it's done, if it is based on historical negotiated cash trade on a regional basis, Lee, does it change much on how much is really negotiated in the cash market?
No, not exactly. And one of the things that isn't very publicized, but by the social media and the media outlets, is that this bill, the great thing about Senator Fisher's bill is that it looks at historical data, where we traded in the past. It allows for public input and it provides flexibility because you can make a change within 2 years. Edit. So I mean, that's the great thing about this bill is that it can be flexible and adjust to the market as time goes down the road.
Okay. Lee, when I look at the bill, the thing that I see in there that makes me go, oh, that's what we need, is the transparency into packer ownership and their inventory. And that's the leverage that the feed yard's looking for, isn't it?
It's one of many that are in this bill that, again, we like lots of the most of the part. The only thing I wish we'd add is I wish we could make it where no one packing plant can buy more than 25% of their inventory from one producer and make that retroactive. But that'd be one something that I would add it. But okay. No, I mean, there are formula deals that are out there that are not equal. And again, those formula ranges list to get the captive supply. The captive supply then is used to keep the market down. Now, some may disagree with that, but from our standpoint and from the data that we look at, that's what we see. And I can tell you, I can see that trading cattle week to week in my own place. You know, no economist has went out and says, yes, they look at, say, you know, look, several economists have come out and said, this cash trade is enough. But what they don't do is they don't look at what happens when one of those packers is full of formula cattle and they're out of the market. Because I can tell you, when they are out of the market, or they're only buying just a very, very small percent, that market is not
higher. I got to stop because we're almost out of time. Senator Fisher, how close are we to getting it out of the committee?
Well, we have, I think, 10 members on the Ag Committee who are supporting the bill. So that's a very good sign. That's what we need. And we have support, technical support we're getting from the USDA to make sure we have a bill that's going to be in the right form and ready to go. Senator Stabenow, who is chair of the committee, she and her staff have also been very, very supportive. So I think we're ready to move in committee. As I said, we continue to add more co-sponsors. We see a lot of momentum. with the bill out in the country with farmers and ranchers, and they understand the impact, the positive impact this is going to have.
Senator, we certainly appreciate your time and all your efforts on this. Thank you so much.
You bet. Thank you. And thank you, Lee, and thanks to U.S. Cattlemen.
Yeah, Lee, I'm sorry to have to have cut you off on that, but I needed to get that question in. Thank you so much, sir.
You bet. Thank you, Chip.
You bet.
The best talkers in ag, including you. Join the conversation on AgriTalk. Call us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Or you could just as easy tweet at us, hashtag it AgriTalk.
Yeah.
That'd be fine, too. Davis Michelson, welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. Chip, the whole cattle thing, right? Am I right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and the whole thing.
The thing is, it's the mandate of the negotiated trade.
Yeah.
That's
where it is.
That's the center of the hang-up. And the comments about perhaps a regional system.
Yeah.
Man, that makes a lot of sense.
The original Fisher proposal was more in line with what Senator Grassley had proposed as well. And that was the nationwide mandate for 50% was Grassley's original bill. That 50% of of cattle trade would be mandated to be negotiated cash trade. Senator Grassley has backed away from that and has agreed with Senator Fisher on the regionalized on how much cattle trade must be negotiated cash on a regional basis. The comment that I made to Lee was that, is that really going to change much? And his answer was no. And the reason is because the amount of negotiated cash cattle trade that would be required would be based on historical norms. So the big reason, and, you know, I baited Lee. I baited him when I said, come on, this is really just a commercial feed yard versus farmer feeder. Issue is what it is. And in many cases it is. In many cases it is. And he said that, but there are commercial yards that favor negotiated cash trade. There are farmer feeders that use AMA, alternative marketing agreements. That is very true. But in reality, what it comes down to is the big feedlots do not want to give up or have any of their AMA marketed cattle threatened. They don't want to lower the percentage of cattle that they move via these alternative marketing agreements, arrangements. It's either agreement or arrangement. I'm not exactly sure. And the reason is because the AMAs treat them good, Davis. Now, part of this bill, as we talked about, is it brings more transparency, and this is where I think the bill is very, very important, and it's got industry support, that it will bring a lot more clarity to just exactly how many the big four packers own and what their plans are with them, and instead of kind of guessing. All right, the Packers are out there buying cattle this week, but they're not going to move them for another 3 weeks. And the reason that they're doing that is because they're willing to wait those 3 weeks so that they don't have to negotiate any cash cattle trade in that third week out there and bring some, you know, take some of the leverage away from the feed yards. There's all that kind of talk out there that stuff is happening, that if we can get rid of the ability of the big four packers to do that, I think would be mission accomplished. I don't know if the cash mandated trade adds to the transparency. Now, does it add to the price discovery? Yes, absolutely. But does it add to transparency? I'm not exactly sure. The other thing that, and by the way, the only thing, as I understand it, the only thing that NCBA does not support is the mandate, and it goes back to their charter. We've had Ethan Lane on, the VP of Governmental Affairs at the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. We've had him on many times, and it just comes down to their bylaws. At the very beginning of NCBA, the directors and the membership agreed that at no time should they support anything that mandates how cattle are traded because of potential unintended consequences. So, I mean, the NCBA decision to not support that part of the bill is easy, Davis, because, I mean, you've been on church councils. I've been on church councils. I've been on homeowners association boards.
Sure.
When it comes to a question of the bylaws, those answers are easy because you do not stray from the bylaws in anything.
Right.
You can't. That's the foundation. So to me, the decision to not support the mandated cash trade on the part of NCBA, that's an easy button decision because it's in the bylaws. Mm-hmm. Now, your membership could take up that issue and change that bylaw, put an amendment in place, but that hasn't happened.
Right.
That hasn't happened.
No.
The library of the AMAs, the alternative marketing arrangements, agreements, I think is very important. I think it's got support throughout the industry, even with the commercial yards. They're like, yeah, absolutely. We'll make that information available.
Well, because there's a precedent for that in the hog industry.
In the hog industry, yes. Excellent, yeah. Davis. There absolutely is. And if we can get that library built, I would guess that negotiated cash trade percentages are going to go down.
Ooh.
That's just a guess. But there's a reason.
That's a good thought. Yeah.
There's a reason that those that use the AMAs are fighting as hard for the AMAs as they are fighting.
Yeah.
It's because it brings them some, it takes some of the uncertainty out of their marketing. They know when they're going to go. There's a reason that they are as popular as they are. I'll just put it that way. And once the library is built, everybody will get a better idea of exactly why that is. Wow, good conversation with
good stuff.
Senator Fisher and Lee Richmuth. Really appreciate that. Come back this afternoon. We're going to continue talking livestock. We've got Lee Scholes from Iowa State University right here, AgriTalk.